Item four, update from investment consulting regarding the finalists of our manager search this morning. Gentlemen?
How do you turn this on, Carolyn? How do you turn this on?
I might have to get our IT guy. I've never seen it. I mean, I've seen it, but I've reused it. Is it not charging?
Yeah, I'm just going to
charging
on
the LED light isn't coming on, so I'm just trying to figure out.
What is that here?
It's a power pack.
Oh.
But
get him in here to check.
Oh,
it.
Hello.
Is it on now?
Now.
There's a green light now.
Good morning.
Pesky on-off switch.
This morning we have she found the on switch.
The finalists for our international value manager search, starting with MFS, then Schroeder's, and then Pureford. And while we went over this in a prior meeting to choose these managers, I'll quickly hit some high points, and then if there are any questions or discussion, please ask. The first is MFS. And MFS is a fundamental manager. They've got a very good set of results. There is a new announcement that's come up that I wanted to make you aware of, and it's probably an area for certainly some questions. The lead portfolio manager, Barnaby Wiener, will be leaving the strategy. He's been managing two strategies at the same time, and there's a wealth strategy, which he has a lot of his personal assets in, and he'll be moving to manage that and leaving this at the end of next year. So there's a substantial transition period. He's been with the strategy about 10 years. Benjamin Stone has been with the strategy 5 years. He's the number two person. He's well-regarded. He and a new person, Pablo De La Mata, will be the two co-portfolio managers starting at the end of next year, so a little 14 months roughly from now. Pablo is an analyst. They have a large analyst pool, more than 100 analysts that work on all the portfolios together, but a lot of his coverage is in this portfolio, and so they've come to know him well, and that's part of the reason why he's being chosen for this role. It's, I think, less of a risk than at many other firms because the research is done in a large pool. They've got more than 100 analysts. These analysts take care of all the portfolio managers. So the portfolio management team is actually quite small. Until now, it's been Barnaby, Benjamin, and Camille. And Camille is really an interface to investors.
She's called an institutional portfolio manager. Means client contact, really.
Yeah, so her actual day-to-day stock selection is that's not really her role. So an important person is transitioning out, and that certainly is an area to consider and to be aware of and to ask questions about. The other two managers are Schroeder's and Pureford. Schroeder's is a quantitative strategy. They have a lot of positions. They track very close to the index, but they've done well. And Pureford is another fundamental manager like MFS, and they have done well.
I like their little book. I know that.
Yeah, it's kind of it's very British, isn't it?
You have
is it British?
They're all British.
It strikes me that way.
You have another board member who hasn't made it for the last few meetings that we've seen, who led into somebody for showing up with a book like that. But he's not here today.
Compact? Easy to carry?
It's different. A little different.
I'm sorry to mean you wrong.
No.
So other than that, we just listen and learn?
Yeah. Of course, the big news being the portfolio management change at MFS. And we thought about, do we still want to bring these people in? And we did. And we think that it's probably going to work out fine, but they need to talk to you about it.
Okay. So another thing to keep in mind here is kind of the patterns of returns. As Marty mentioned, MFS and Pureford follow a fundamental model, so they're doing the hands-on company research, figure out what they want to pay for a company. It's what we kind of think of as the more traditional model, and Schroeder's is combining that with a very broad quantitative screen where they're covering 12,000 stocks. One of the things with Schroeder's is you get a very broad, diverse portfolio, 700 stocks on average, up to 1,400 stocks today, so we could have an argument about is that overly diversified or not. I think there probably is a fair argument that it may be there. But one of the hallmarks is the return patterns of these firms. MFS and Pureford both kind of hang their hat on, we don't want to lose money. So you get a period like 2008, they're going to offer the downside protection. Schroeder's going to be more market-like. They're going to move with the market and just try and add value in every cycle. But if the market's down 40%, they're going to be down 40% plus or minus, you know, something. If the market's down 40%, MFS and Pierford are going to be out there saying, we want to lose less. We're not going to gain as much when the market roars back, but we want to lose less. And when you compound that over time, they're going to argue, rightly so, that you come up with a superior rate of return with less volatility. The MFS portfolio manager change, I know Milam has gotten comfortable with it. I think I'm a little less comfortable with it. That MFS looked great coming into this, and I think you've really got to discount the long-term record a bit. The gentleman who's going to be leading this has been on for 5 years. 5 years is not nothing, but your lead is going to be retiring here in another year. So take everything you see from MFS's historical record with a grain of salt and really try to focus on what you can get out of the current team prospectively. It does knock them back a fair amount, and that's something to keep in mind here.
Boards have a tendency to hire whoever shows the greatest historical performance, and that's not always the right way to go. And in this case, as Tim said, you have to discount that history a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said.
With regards to Schroeder's, it looks like they dip in. Actually, the majority of their holdings are in small cap value as opposed to the other two, which are more large cap. A concern or distinction or reason for it?
It does present a risk because every difference from your benchmark presents an opportunity to outperform or a risk of underperforming. So when you go down scale, you have more volatile companies. There's more opportunity for them to have upside, become mm-hmm. a bigger company. But if things turn down, there's more risk. Now, Schroeder's will use a quantitative overlay and try to track very close in terms of risk to the benchmark. So they're of the three least likely to underperform. But if the market's down, they'll be down similar to the market, where MFS, when the market's down very hard, will be probably down less. But when the market bounces hard, like 2003, 2009, they'll underperform. And they could underperform substantially. But over that cycle, MFS especially, yeah. And Schroeder's, Pierford is somewhat similar. Yeah.
Schroeder's turnover rate is
very high.
As far as transaction costs and that sort of thing. So certainly, I mean, high on a relative basis or an absolute basis, but really high on a relative basis compared to the other two.
With Schroeder's, we would have to be in the commingle fund to help mitigate some of those costs and be shared with others. That's a bit of a problem because Schroeder's, while the team is running $35 billion, something like that, this product is $500 million, so we're going to be there actually would be a one investor who's larger than us, but we would be the second largest investor, which, as we've learned, caused some liquidity issues if we need to get out quickly. We learned that lesson with Tradewinds. It's a bit of a concern, and in the back of my mind, I'm trying not to hold this against Schroeder's, but this organization has had a troubled track record with quantitative strategies in international equity. We had McKinley, which didn't work out. We had GMO, which just
organization being Contra Costa. Right?
Yeah, I'm trying not to hold that against Schroeder's, but the track record of the folks in this room getting the right quantitative manager in the international equity space is less than stellar.
You know, you guys aren't bringing us very good news. Considering we picked three and thought we were going down in the great ballpark, and now we're...
No. Let me step back. You've got three solid managers, Jerry. What I'm trying to do is show you where the risks lie. You're going to hear the positives from all three managers.
Yeah.
I want to make sure the board hears the risks as well.
And you might as well talk about when you get Schroeder's in here. You want to ask him about the turnover, and what would be involved in a separate account versus
I'm really more disturbed about MFS than I am Schroeder's. Right. I understand
these things happen. You know they happen. Portfolio managers
retire, move.
It isn't like Barnaby's an old guy. He's not. He just said, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do this.
And I'm trying to figure out consultants, huh?
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out
well,
in the...
I'm an old guy. A little different.
You know, Bob, in the short space of time we have to interview these folks, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to discern with MFS the gravity of the change or the you know, the potential disruption of that change or lack thereof. If you were going to ask one question of them to discern that, what would you ask?
The question is how is Barnaby leaving going to impact this portfolio, and how are you going to mitigate the loss of his insights? And I think what they'll say is he's still going to be on the committee.
Right.
He's still going to be around. He's not going to be picking the stocks. And how is that going to impact?
Yeah, another question along that line might be, how do you make the investment decision process? If they always say, well, Barnaby does this and that, and then you know it's a problem. If it's more team-like, then it's probably less of a problem.
Yeah.
And the complement to that is you could ask, how important is the portfolio manager in the process, which is sort of a double-edged question. Because on the one hand, they have to say, well, it's important, but on the other hand,
completely unimportant. Yeah, it doesn't figure in.
Doesn't matter at all.
So, yeah. If you want to watch him squirm a little bit, ask that question. Yeah.
But you can tease out the relative importance. I mean, if you're bubbling up great ideas through your investment pool, and the portfolio managers are basically implementing a model and overriding it on occasion, that's one thing. If the portfolio managers are looking at the research, discerning their own broad trends, and putting that together, you know, the intellectual property that's in Barnaby's head is very important, and
right.
It's no longer going to be 100% focused on this product.
Well, remind me, I know you talked about it earlier. To what degree is he an architect versus a journeyman on the process? Is he the architect of this structure? Is he the guy that created it? Does he create the model?
To a great extent, I would think he would be, yes, because he's making the ultimate decisions.
He and the other guy.
Yes, yeah, he and Jonathan.
Scott, is your question, how has this product been in place? And he's
no. My question was, really, how crucial is he to the functioning of it? That is, did he design the house on the napkin, then do the blueprint, and then oversee the build kind of thing? Is he that fundamental to the process?
And there are two ways that an investment process can work. One, that portfolio manager can have an idea based on what he sees, go to the analyst that covers building materials, for example, and ask them to do the work or ask for their opinions. Or they can wait until the building materials analyst comes to them and says, it's a good time to buy, or you own it and you should sell it. So you can be very dependent on the analyst pool, or you can be driving the analyst pool. And of course, they're going to be in the middle somewhere, but
yeah.
How far on the spectrum are they?
With regards to the MFS and their valuing the portfolio on a monthly basis, is that a concern with regards to liquidity, or if an issue comes up?
We need to clarify that with them, because I just talked to them yesterday and they said they're actually valuing it on a daily basis.
Okay.
With liquidity on 5 to 10 days notice. However, if you want to pull the entire thing, again, they've got they've got $385 million in the commingled fund today. We'd be coming in with $320. There are going to be liquidity issues if we have to walk away from that one in a hurry. There are going to be liquidity issues with any commingled fund if we have to walk away in a hurry, but the bigger percentage of that fund that you are, the bigger the issues become, which would be an issue both with MFS and with Schroeder's, and more than likely with Pureford as well. So,
what people often do is they'll take the whole portfolio and they'll just carve it up and make it two portfolios. One belongs to you and one is the commingled fund. And then it's just like liquidating a separate account. And that's probably what would happen.
Our preference is the ACWI benchmark with regards to this product. Is that fair to say?
I think it's fair to say, however, when the value space, you tend to get fewer and fewer people buying emerging markets that are running quickly. The emerging markets tend to be more the domain of the growth managers.
Okay.
So while we can measure them against ACWI over a very long time period, because we still want them to beat that benchmark, over a shorter time period, we're probably going to look at doing
EFA.
A dual benchmark approach of EFA and ACWI.
Okay.
Which opens up another subject, which is that you're coming in with a new investment policy. revision, and the investment policy, which we just reviewed and talked about yesterday, has an EFA benchmark at the moment. Mm-hmm. It kind of depends on who you hire as to and how they prefer to run as to whether we stay with that EFA or move to an ACWI, I think.
But the three managers you have here today all run far below what the ACWI benchmark would have in terms of emerging markets. You're looking at 10 to 15% kind of allocations here as the upper bounds for emerging markets. The ACWI benchmark is more in the mid-20s. So we can fine-tune that a little bit further down the road, but that should not be a hindrance to selecting a manager today.
With MFS, is Barnaby going to be here? Be one of the presenters today?
Don't believe so.
I don't think so.
No. According to the book, he's not. Okay. Camille is the presenter. Okay.
So you're not going to have a direct portfolio manager from MFS, unfortunately. You're going to have the client portfolio manager.
We told MFS that it's better to bring a portfolio manager, and they did not. So. Okay.
Strike.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, that was just a great start.
Wow.
To the
wow.
So would you like to vote now? Because
yeah. Wow.
We have a lot of time.
That's right. Oh,
I wish it was easier.
Okay. Yep. Tim said that you haven't had luck with quantitative management. Well, Intech has been pretty successful over some years. It isn't like a quantitative manager can't work for you. It's so don't automatically write off Schroeder's, and Pierford looks pretty good. So you know you don't.
Yeah, but
Bill McKinley had a unique sort of thing.
Yeah, they did. But
they weren't really quantitative. They had their own little tilt on quantitative, and that they looked at the, as I remember, recommendations from outside analysts, and kind of.
And rank
through
those.
That in the mix. And then GMO kind of had their own little twist to it.
Well, there was a lot of quant in GMO, but there was a lot of big heads.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
No, everybody's got their own slant on quant. And again, maybe I should have kept that comment to myself. I'm just focused on in international equity. We have had trouble in that space.
Yeah.
So.
Are we looking to place all the funds in just one manager, or
yes? Yeah. Okay. Let's get started. Yeah. We can bring him in. Thanks, Liz.
True.
Just blew my wall.